A Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd day, of May. I'm getting ahead of myself. You can tell a holiday weekend is on the horizon. We'll have Reds baseball for you tonight. 6:10 for a 6:40 first pitch. Tommy Thrall will take you into game two details of Cardinals and Redlegs from the Great American Ballpark. Indiana Hoosiers, base runner. One out, bottom of the seventh. The two-seed Hoosiers lead. The seven-seed Illini 2-1. They score two runs in the sixth, trying to add on to find a date with Iowa. The Hawkeyes, the three-seed, knocked off Michigan 13-3. Tracy Smith's Wolverines had a tough day. They had four errors and just four hits. And Iowa, 10-run rule there. Indiana, if they would win, would play Iowa on Thursday. That's why it's important to win these. You get a day off to get your people back together, get them fed, get them water, get them healthy. If you're playing out of the loser's bracket, it's every day until you're knocked out. That's tough. We promised you we'd head to Indianapolis. We are. Dustin Dupirak is our great friend and the beat writer for the Indianapolis Star, for the Indiana Pacers. What's happening, my man? How are you?
Doing well, Glass. How about yourself, man?
Summertime in Bloomington, buddy. The college kids left a couple weeks ago. The MCCSE kids got out last weekend. Our friends in RBB are gone this Thursday. The sun's out. There's places to park. You remember these great days.
I do. B-Town summer is something spectacular, for sure.
It is. You can get out and enjoy.
I'm glad you're enjoying that.
I am. Are you coming down anytime? What are you doing? You got to get down here. I owe you some cold beverages. We got to go. We'll sneak up on the Osterman compound down there on the south side, and we'll raise some hell one weekend and see what's going on.
Perfect. We should do that.
We'll invite ourselves. Sometimes that's easier.
Definitely. Don't tell them. Don't put it out on here.
Well, you got two kids. They got the new dog. They got the other dog running around. It's we'll just show up. There's nowhere to escape from there.
Exactly. That's important. That's how we need to handle it.
I was opining before you called in. Indiana led the Big Ten in attendance this year. Their average of 16,000 and change was the best. First time in a while that they've done that. Who has the bigger gyms in the league? I could think of Columbus, Madison, and Maryland. Is that it?
I think so. I mean, Bryce Jordan Center is probably up there, but it obviously never draws at that
level. Well, you know what? That's interesting because maybe I just see it on TV where it's just it's covered. I know why. You know why. There we go. A quick Google tells me 15,261. So that's up there. Mm-hmm. Iowa City's around that same mark. The Barn is like that. Illinois is like that. The Breslin Center, everything's in that kind of 14, 15, 16 range, isn't it?
Yeah, no, more or less. I mean, like none of them stand out as giant, and I think there's a reason for that. I think you want, one, to keep demand high, but two, just because it's just they're better intimate arenas. I mean, I think while I like Madison and I like Columbus, they do have more of a feel of an NBA arena where they're just a little bit bigger and it's a little bit newer, and you lose something there, I think. Even Breslin is like half that way, but it's still – like closer, you're closer to being just on top of the players as a fan and everything like that. You know, Assembly Hall functions the same way, even though it's obviously goes up away into the balcony. It still feels like everybody's right on top of you, and I think that's best for best for the atmosphere and everything else. I mean, obviously, I spent a whole year in NBA arenas, and you definitely miss something.
Well, I figured you would be the man to ask there. In a quick Google, in some random website, of course, this has to be right. Ohio State 18-8, Maryland Xfinity 17-950. Simon Scott Assembly Hall has us here before the renovation. Very similar to the Kohl Center, and then State Farm is 16. Everything else is less than 16 in the league with Welsh Ryan. How big is the new Welsh Ryan?
It's bigger. I don't know what the
But I think to your point, though, I think it's definitely cozy. It's not huge, and we know the Jersey Mike's rack or whatever the hell they call that thing. That place is a nut house.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, yeah, they're all like that, and they're like that for a reason. Again, it adds to, it adds to the ambiance, and it makes you just feel like you're on top of everybody. But you think of going to places like the United Center, I mean, that place is so spread out. And you can create, you know, a real environment in there, obviously, when the Bulls are good. But it's just, you know, when those places are bigger or when they're not selling out, you lose something. It basically, like, at the college level, if you're getting, if you're only, you know, having 16, 17,000 capacity, you know, even if you get 13, 14 of that,
you got a chance.
The way those places are built, you really got a chance of having an impact and, you know, making enough noise that that it does feel like a madhouse and it does feel crazy. So there's reasons why that's that way.
Do you have any fever ties besides just being in the same building?
Well, when I was on the beat for a couple of weeks, we just crossed over. Chloe Peterson has taken over. She's going to be our full-time Fever beat writer. So I was doing, I covered camp. I covered the first preseason game and kind of went to the first real one on Friday.
How do you not play Grace Berger when there's IU gear all over the place? Player 2 minutes.
Yeah.
What is that all about?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing was they were keeping it close. I mean, I do think
you put her in at the end of the first quarter for a minute, and everybody, no one leaves that building saying, "Oh my God, she didn't play."
Yeah, exactly. That probably would have been the wise decision. I do think that, that would have been the smart call.
But they haven't had very many smart calls. You thought this draft was going to be the new start of it. Well, when you win six games a year, it's hard to say things are going well. And then you do all this, and then you pump it up, and then you got the billboards and the media and the hype, and then you're like, oh, we're not. Well, are you going to win the league on the first day? Oh, my fault. Excuse me. Sorry about that. What are you doing? Okay, I'm getting out of that. I'm getting back in my lane, as the kids say. But you've been busy today. You didn't think you'd be writing about Calbert Chaney on the 23rd day of May, did you?
Did not expect it. No, I was not expecting to see that move. But, I mean, one that makes sense, and obviously he was in a player development role with the Pacers. I mean, that's on the bench because they do put a lot of people on the bench, but he's not necessarily one of the three. And so I do think it puts him in a good position to make a move at IU, allows a couple people to move up with the Pacers. But I think it just works for Indiana to have as many, as many alums as you can be part of that staff in some way, shape, or form. Everybody whose face you can show around that place helps. So that's, I think it's a great hire for Mike Woodson. And Calkins keeps getting himself in good positions as far as, being able to work with players, being around guys. I think he was really useful. I mean, I got to see him a little bit, just working out with players after practice and everything like that. I mean, he spent a lot of time working with Pacers bigs, just trying to just work on skill work and the one-on-one stuff, two-on-two stuff, shooting drills, all that kind of thing. He did a lot of work with these guys skill-wise. And it was a pretty skilled team offensively, and I think you saw some strides. So I think Chaney has a lot of positives he could point to for what he did with Indiana.
And the other thing, I'll say it, he won't. 82 games is a grind. You're there for how many? What do you cover, 70?
Somewhere in those lines. I mean, I probably did 60 because I had a late start, but I'll probably get about 70 this year. Just take off. We usually don't go to the one-off road trips, but they'll probably be, 10, 11, 12 of those. I imagine I'm looking at about 70 this year. And it's a lot. It's a long year.
And now he doesn't go to all those either, but the NBA is a different tenor than college basketball. Completely different. You are working with kids. You are not working with professionals. And Calbert, to be fair, has done this before. So he did this with Tom Crean, and then he went back to the league. So he's taking a look at it. But, man, you line up Mike Woodson, Calbert Chaney, and Jordan Halls is there. Tyler Tackman had that great tweet about, hey, you know, guys are coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, and that's, I think, a big reason why IU wanted to bring an alum back. Obviously Cal Chaney had been around. I mean, he wasn't one of the guys that you needed to convince. You know, he was willing to sign on board, with Tom Crean and with whoever. He wasn't necessarily one of the biggest holdouts, out of that alumni group that was just sort of pining for a night guy. At the end of the day, it was, I think, important to bring sort of the whole family back together, and having an alum, in the head coach's chair just allows for, a lot of opportunity there, a lot of options to bring guys back and have all-time greats be a part of it. And also, it helps on the recruiting end, but on the flip side, it also just helps for your morale. I think just having guys in the building that know what it's like when you win and win at a high level, what it's like in here when they're a championship-level team, when they're a Big Ten championship-level team, when they're, a Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four, National Championship-level team, having those guys around that have seen it, I think matters. And so I think I don't know who left for the Baguette the opening, but it's a pretty obvious decision. If you can hire Cal Chaney as Indiana University, you do it. So it's obviously a big, big move for them.
And the exciting part of it, like you mentioned, you have just the perspective that you cannot talk about unless you've done it. And that counts. And kids want to know that, and their parents want to know that. And these guys played the NBA. They didn't talk about what they think it takes to get there. They've done it. And in this day and age, that stuff seems to be awfully, awfully important. Now, getting to the NBA is a big deal. And the lottery, the Pacers were in it last week. The good news is they did not lose draft position. Well, the bad news, they didn't get lucky either, because some teams did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think at the that was still big news. I mean, they got a little bit lucky, too. One important thing was the Spurs getting the number one pick and picking ahead of Houston. Got them the 32nd pick.
Good point.
Otherwise, their second round draft pick was going to be, or the highest one was going to be around 50. They already had one set at about 55. So Kevin Pritchard keeps mentioning that, and it is important for a few reasons. I mean, obviously, last year they picked around 31, 32 and got Andrew Nembhard, so you can get a valuable player at that level. Obviously, it's no guarantee once you get in the second round that those guys are going to be able to stick with you, but you know they have at least one example of somebody who can in Nembhard. But they're obviously looking to move a lot of those picks, and that's one more that's got some value to it, and it's got some special value because you know they're adding another two-way contract onto the roster. You can have three two-way guys on the roster now, and so that just gives you a better place to store some of those guys and more reason to take risks with second round picks that you don't have to give guaranteed contracts to, but you can keep on a two-way. So that makes that pick even more valuable. It can help them if the Pacers keep it. It can also help somebody else if they want to move it, if they want to move up in this draft, whether that's from 7 or whether that's just from 26, if they want somebody in that, you know, kind of 10 to 20 range. And if they could certainly package together four existing players. So they got a lot of flexibility, you know, don't really know what all is going to be available yet. But the way Pritchard, put it was like, you make a lot of calls before the lottery, but none of them are all that substantive. I mean, you're just kind of feeling people out and getting a sense of what they might have, but you don't know what you have until those lottery balls go through. So now they know where they stand. They're going to have a better chance of understanding, okay, what do other people want that they have? What moves are they willing to make? They're going to get some calls. They're going to make some calls. They're going to have a better sense of what it is that they're actually trading. And they've got a lot of flexibility with all of these things.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're asset hoarding in a good way because, let's be fair, when you run into the free agent market, the top-tier free agents aren't coming to Indianapolis. But when you can package a deal, move some salary, that's the different flexibility the Pacers can have, and that's why pick 32 is a big deal. You've got a chance at pick 32 to get it right. 55, probably not. Now, stop with the Jokic pick at 41. Stop with Tony Park. I got all the exceptions to the rules. I know all those. But it doesn't happen very often. Now, two things. I'll get on Pritchard's case here in a minute because I want your thoughts on it. How deep is this draft? And the other part of that is, if the Pacers use these picks, they've got T.J. McConnell, Miles Turner, and Buddy Hield, and 11 other guys that are like 18 years old.
Yeah, no, exactly. And Pritchard has gone so far as to say, and you could parse whether or not this is even good strategy, but he's been pretty clear about saying, I'm not keeping five rookies. I just can't do it. Basically, because there's too many guys that are young already. And the way that he phrased it, the first time he said this to us was after Miles's extension. Basically, all the writers got to meet with him for a little while. And he said, they kind of cannibalized themselves, basically. And that's obviously a pretty grotesque way of putting it. But what it comes down to is when you have so much youth, and especially if they're in the same position, they take each other's opportunities away and make it harder for them to grow and learn and get playing time. I mean, even, they didn't get him in the same draft or anything, but they acquired him pretty much at the same time. Jalen Smith and Isaiah Jackson, really took playing time away from each other.
They did. Same thing with Duarte and Mathurin. Well, Duarte was the first 13th pick overall, and now those two guys are tripping, falling over each other.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, more of the case, Mathurin is swallowing Duarte up.
Right, but you don't want the 13th pick swallowed up. That's the problem. You wanted
exactly. So, you are already running a risk of Chris Duarte sort of fading away, and you know at some point maybe it's not this year, but you're going to have to make a decision between Jalen Smith and Isaiah Jackson. I mean, they were able to find a workable rotation toward the end of the year. They especially got in a position where once they kind of were ready to cruise to the end of the year and not make the playoffs, they pretty much took Turner out of the rotation. So Jackson and Smith were really splitting time, and they got a lot of growth there, I think, individually. But obviously when they get back and start playing again, Miles Turner gets his job back. So you already have a couple of those scenarios, and I think they'll stay away from a couple positions. I don't think they're taking a center. And I think basically there are a lot of people that are thinking about Trace Jackson Davis. If they view Trace as a five, and I think a lot of people do, I think that the last place that Trace wants to go is Indiana because he gets
you got to have a second team. Good teams have balance. You got to have about nine guys that can play where you rotate in with one or two guys from the starting five. That's how you get through 82 games. We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
But bringing all this up is interesting because Pritchard, look, love him, hate him, or otherwise, he's made some good moves just like every general manager, and he's made some questionable moves. Pritchard told you in December he thought that DeAndre Ayton was a better player than Miles Turner. That's made me itch and sweat since I've watched the playoffs, since I watched the end of the season. He flat out got it wrong. He got lucky, but he got it wrong.
Yeah. Oh, he has. I mean, I don't think you can look at Pritchard's track record with the Pacers and say that it isn't a mixed bag. It most certainly is. There have been really smart decisions, and there have been very questionable decisions. Some, I guess, with Larry Bird sitting over him, but definitely draft picks that they have not gotten right. I mean, I think really it took until this last draft for them to really nail one, and they did. I think in this draft with Mathurin and Nembhard, I think they really got those right. They certainly, I think, the Halliburton trade was ultimately correct and important.
Duarte is 40 years old. He's older than you are.
Seems that way sometimes. I'm going to tell him that next time I see him. there definitely have been some questionable. I mean, Duarte and Isaiah Jackson at this point, you have to say are both. While you can certainly see the talent there, I mean, as far as the total payoff, you have to say that those are iffy, and that there are better players that you could have got, certainly between Duarte and Jackson, that have been available. You go back to Goga, I mean, that's a missed pick. There's a bunch of those in his track record. So, I think you have reason to worry and wonder about whether he is getting it right. That being said, he's got some right ones, and I think he's in a position where you're not firing him now. But I think to go back to your initial question of how deep is this draft, I mean, I think, certainly you could end up guessing wrong. But I would say that there are enough guys who look good on paper that no one's going to walk away from if he picks at seventh. If he takes any of the guys that I think can be top 10, no one's going to walk away from this draft saying you screwed it up. Now, a year from now, you might say that. 2 years from now, you might say that. 3 years from now, you might say that. But it so happens that I think a lot of the guys that sort of fit in that area at least fit the body type that they're looking for. Guys that are around 6'6", 6'7".
That's what the league is, buddy. You can't have enough of those guys. I was making fun of the Duarte Mathurin, but you can move. You got to move them. You play them all together. Mm-hmm. You need one guy to handle the ball and everybody else to be 6'7" or bigger, and that's it.
Yeah, no, exactly. Somewhere at least 6'5". And so a bunch of those guys fit. You look at look at the Thompson twins. I think that if I don't know.
Hold me now.
Either of those guys will be on
the
board.
Wait a second. Sorry.
What?
But the anyway. So when is the draft? We know the combine just ended, so we've got this whole
22nd.
The mystical week this week to get everybody back to school or stay in or go or stay or go. And then the 22nd will be on that. You got to come back and talk to me before the draft gets started. We've got to nail down the Thompson twins and these other G League guys that nobody's heard of before. Nobody has except the scouts. So that's your homework, not on the Memorial Day weekend, but you got to come back and bug me back in
but
June.
But I got time. Yeah, I got to come back in June and I'll get it done for you.
We will we will exchange notes on Osterman's back deck as the dogs bark and the children run.
Absolutely.
You're the best, buddy. We'll do
you
it again. I'll get back with you in June. We'll get the big pre-draft coverage, and this time I'm going to do a full hour with you, but I surprised you today, so I didn't want to pull you for that much time, but let's find a time where we can do like a big hour for our Pacer fans. Would that work?
Great to me, man. Terrific. All right. Absolutely.
Double D, you're the best, my man. I'll be in touch. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. And remember, at the track, no right turn. It's all left turns this
all
weekend.
Left. I'll keep that in mind. Have a good one, Glad.
Thanks, buddy. Dustin Dupirak from the Indy Star. We will talk more Pacers hoops with him as he covers the team. The Calbert-Cheney news killed us this afternoon because, well, Dustin covers that as well with the Pacers. So we couldn't get into all the players we want to, but he's great. He will come back.